What is up, everybody? Welcome to Locked On Vikings. I am your host. I am your pal. I am the kid you copied off in math class. My name is Luke Braun. You can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. And if you're too lazy to scroll through your podcast app or worry about downloads or anything, and you have a smart speaker, maybe you have a new one you just got for the holidays, you can ask it to play podcast Locked On Vikings, and it'll just play the latest one. It is an awesome feature, and the whole Locked On network has it. Locked On Draft, Locked On NFL, all that stuff. Give it a try. So on today's show, as you may have saw with the title, we are going to finish out our whole post-mortem schedule, right? The Vikings season has been over for a whole month now. It is time to kind of put it all to bed and finish out the postseason analysis. Today, we are going to talk a bunch about the pass rush. There's going to be a lot of talk about Anthony Barr and his role in it. And hopefully, if we have time, we'll get to the special teamers and talk a little bit about that as well. If not, we will defer that to tomorrow's show. We'll kind of just see how things work out and how time goes. But first, we do have one piece of news. There was a report late on Tuesday from Darren Wolfson of KSTP, super reputable beat reporter. His word is basically gospel, that said that Terrence Newman was weighing retiring from coaching, basically pulling away from the game after doing it for 1 year. He was the D-backs coach after not making it through training camp. And it's, you know, coaching is really stressful. It takes a lot out of you. So it's understandable that somebody after the first year would say, you know what, nope, I'm done. I'm just going to move on to the next chapter of my life. It's also kind of a rough job to be the assistant D-backs coach on the Vikings because there's not a lot of upward mobility, right? Just think about Jerry Gray, the D-backs coach. He's never going to get credit for what happens with, you know, Rhodes and Waynes and Mackenzie Alexander. It's always going to be credited to Mike Zimmer, who's maybe one of the best D-backs coaches of all time, if not the best. And that's why he's here, you know, in a head coaching role. So when you're the D-backs coach for that guy, you're never going to get credit. You're just going to be seen as a rubber stamp, even though I think we in Minnesota all understand how good Jerry Gray is as a developer of talent. You know, it's not like people elsewhere in the league are really going to give him a second look because he's just overshadowed. And when you're the assistant to that guy, who's never going to leave that position, right? Because it's like this great job, especially if you just love coaching defensive backs and you want to work under a legend, it's an awesome position. It's just not great for upward mobility. And that means that if Jerry Gray never vacates the spot, Terrence Newman can never take it over. So it's not like, you know, there's this big goal to work toward. It would be really, it would take a lot of patience for Terrence Newman to get a better opportunity than assistant D-backs coach for the Minnesota Vikings. And if he's not willing to put in the colossal amount of work that that would take and he wants to step away instead, listen, I understand that. But other than that, you know, again, we're in a really sparse time for Vikings news, which gives us a chance to do all of this analysis. So I'm actually just going to jump right into it. Usually we do kind of news and updates and stuff. The only other update that we have to talk about is the pain bracket. Teddy Bridgewater, at least, I'm recording this with about an hour left on the poll, but it looks like Teddy Bridgewater's injury is going to edge out 38-7, so we can move on to the next one. We are going to throw it way back and talk about a couple things that happened in the old times. The 1975 Divisional, this was in the middle of the Vikings 0-4 Super Bowl run. The Divisional playoffs against the Cowboys, the invention of the Hail Mary, we know it as the Drew Pearson push-off, versus Carl Kasulke's motorcycle accident. He was a safety in 1973 in training camp. He got in a motorcycle accident. He ended up paralyzed. The report or the stories of players who were in that locker room when Bud Grant got up in front of the team and told them, you know, and he cried, and they say you could hear a pin drop. I'll link a story about when he finally passed away in 2008 of a heart attack. It's a really, really sad moment. And I think for the older fans who were around and kind of living through that, it was really, you know, it's tough to watch your heroes go down like that. So I think that it's a much more, you know, somber thing than the Vikings lost a game. But at the same time, it's far less famous. So I'm curious to see which one gets more votes. Moving on to the main topic of the day, we are going to spend most of the time talking about the 2018 Vikings and their pass rush. This is going to be a lot of good news, and hopefully it should be a lot of fun. But first, I want to lay down a little bit of groundwork and say, okay, you're evaluating how well a player or a team got after the quarterback. What do you want to look at? And the first instinct I think we all have as fans is to say, well, how many sacks did they get, right? How many times did they get to the quarterback and end the play right there? But I think that that's, you know, reductive, right? There is a lot more to a pass rush than whether or not you got to the quarterback. You can do a lot of damage to a play in the moments leading up to tackling the quarterback. You can rush the throw. You can cause them to bail out of the pocket. You can often, you know, get credited with a pressure and flushing the quarterback out into the arms of someone else who then gets the sack. You deserve credit for making that play, right? So I think it's really important to look at pressures. And the data bears this out too. When you look at pressures from year to year, game to game, the good players tend to get pressures very consistently and the bad players don't. And when you look at sacks, that's not necessarily as true. There are games where very, very good pass rushers will just go without getting a sack. And, you know, very mediocre or even bad pass rushers will have like two sack games out of nowhere on their only two pressures of the last three games, right? It's just a little bit of a flukier thing. There's a lot with, you know, converting a pressure into a sack that is just not up to the defensive lineman. In my opinion, I think it's actually up to the quarterback most of all, and sometimes the scheme. But think about it. Think about like Everson Griffin or Danielle Hunter. You know, they dusted an offensive lineman and they're running after the quarterback. It is not really up to them whether or not the quarterback is good enough to get the ball out in time, right? If it's Drew Brees, like say you have your best game of the season, but Drew Brees is the quarterback, he gets rid of the ball every time, you got six pressures but no sacks, we should probably credit you for having your best game of the season, right? And I think looking at those six pressures will do a better job of helping us identify what your best game of the season was, right? Versus, you know, I only got through once, but it was against some rookie that didn't know how to work in the pocket, so I got a sack, and then I had another sack where I actually didn't beat my guy at all. Somebody else on the other side of the formation won, and the quarterback ran right into my arms. I would much rather have, you know, the game against Drew Brees where he's dusting a lineman all day and ruining the offense, and it just happens to, you know, necessitate that Drew Brees is really good. I think with pressure, you necessitate that the quarterback is good. With a sack, it ends the play, and it's way more impactful, and that's great. But it's not very predictive. That is to say, it does not, you know, help us predict what is going to happen in the future. And I think when you're talking about postmortem analysis like that, it's implied that you're talking about, you know, what that means headed into the next season and beyond. But at the same time, you know, sacks matter, and getting a sack is really a huge drive killer all the time. So it makes sense to still credit people for like that kind of last moment of being able to chase down and get to the quarterback a little bit. So there is a great Pro Football Focus stat called pass rushing productivity, which is basically just pressures. But if you got a sack, it counts for a little more. And we're going to use that as kind of our baseline, as well as pass rushing grades, and we're going to kind of craft our analysis based on that. But we're going to do all that on the other side of the ad break. So let's talk a little bit about gambling. I don't do it. I don't have enough confidence in a lot of my predictions to gamble. And if you go back and look at my postseason predictions for this year, you would see why. But people will very often ask for gambling advice from a podcast host. And the best advice that I can give you, I can't tell you who's going to win or what's going to happen, what prop bets you should take or whatever, but I can tell you that you should use MyBookie because it is a legit service. It is, they've been in business for years. They know what they're doing. Their payouts are fair and everything like that. And I think when you get into gambling, it's really easy to get hoodwinked. MyBookie is not going to do that to you. So if you think you can be more correct about maybe some Super Bowl things, we'll talk about that in tomorrow's show. But if you think you can beat me in my Super Bowl predictions, and you might be right, lay down some cash, win a little bit of money. You can even pull it up in the middle of the game. They have live in-game betting. They have all kinds of rewarding player perks, all kinds of great stuff out there. You can even bet on like fantasy points if maybe you're the best fantasy player you know, but all the prop bets and the over-unders and all that is not really your jam. You can still bet on how many fantasy points a player is going to get, even in this, the not fantasy season. So here's what's cool. What I can do for you is if you join MyBookie today, go make an account, make a deposit, and when you make your account, enter the promo code LOCKEDON, and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. That's 100% match. Just use the promo code LOCKEDON and you can get a dollar for dollar match. It's free money for you to go gamble and maybe even double up on if you're really, really smart about football, which I know you are because you listen to Locked On Vikings. You play, you win, you get paid. It's that simple. Visit MyBookie online today. MyBookie. Go do it. Make a buck. Moving on, let's talk about the nitty-gritty, the player-by-player of the Vikings pass rush in 2018. And I want to start off on a very celebratory note. Let us take a moment and admire Danielle Hunter. He signed a big contract in the offseason. I think there were some unwise people that didn't want them to. They didn't think that, you know, he had realized his potential or whatever. He was really good in 2017, and he only got better in 2018, and he's still very young. He still actually could improve more and really be, like, one of the premier edge rushers in the league for years to come. It's a great guy to have locked down for multiple years. So let's talk a little bit about the numbers. So he pass rushed 478 times, and he got pressure 67 of them. 15 were sacks, which is an awesome season anyways. But 67 pressures, that's the one that I'm worried about. That is an amazing number. That is an 8.6 pass rushing productivity score. That is a lot of that is inflated because he got so many sacks. And just like we talked about, I don't think that we should give him all the credit for all of those turning into sacks, but we should give him credit for getting 67 pressures. And that is an unbelievable clip. That is tied with Justin Houston in terms of pass rushing productivity. That is better than Von Miller. That is better than DeMarcus Lawrence. That is better than Yannick Ngakoue. That's a lot of superstars, and he is right up there with them, sandwiched between Frank Clark and Justin Houston. He made the Pro Bowl, obviously deserved to do it, even though you know my thoughts on the Pro Bowl itself as a measure. Danielle Hunter, no two ways about it. He was a superstar in the pass rush. And I think from a tape angle, and I don't think I've talked about tape enough in these postmortems, but from a tape angle with Danielle Hunter, you know, part of his thing coming out of college was that he had a very limited arsenal of pass rush moves. When you are a pass rusher, you want to have a variety of different ways you can beat an offensive lineman. If you only have one move, then the lineman going against you knows exactly how to counter that one move, and they know they just have to do that every time, and they can beat you. Danielle Hunter has expanded on his pass rush arsenal every single year he's been in the league. And we even saw in training camp, he was testing out like a spin move and you know, crushing Riley Reiff with it already. And he has added something new every single time. A lot of credit to Andre Patterson for that. A lot of credit to guys like Everson Griffin and Brian Robeson for helping mentor him through that. They've really, you know, and Mike Zimmer, you know, as the head coach, they really all deserve credit for molding Danielle Hunter, or at least providing the path through which Danielle Hunter's incredible and well-documented work ethic can create this just monstrous player. Moving on, the next most productive pass rushers, on the defensive line at least, were actually the three techs, Tom Johnson and Sheldon Richardson. They had about similar efficiency, which is really, really valuable, right? Because Sheldon Richardson, I think we can all kind of say, all right, the numbers, they were about the same this year, but we can all kind of safely assume that Sheldon Richardson, you're going to want him on the field more often than Tom Johnson. But Richardson can't play every play, right? He's a big guy. He's going to get gassed. You need a rotational guy. And Tom Johnson, as that rotational guy, is absolutely amazing. I would really love to see the Vikings hang on to him. I'm not sure if they're going to. They kind of almost didn't last year. Remember, he had that tiny stint in Seattle. But I really hope that Tom Johnson can stick around for really as long as he's got legs under him, because he is still productive at this young age. I think part of that is that, you know, his career and his, like, quote-unquote prime ended up in these, like, weird leagues. Like, I think he played in the Arena League and in Canada and stuff. And I feel like maybe the level of competition there meant that his body didn't go under as much stress. But either way, I'll take it. And with Sheldon Richardson, you know, this wonderful deal that between both teams where we got a great year of three-tech play, and he got a kind of prove-it year where he can now go test the market, probably, and make a whole bunch of money. If the Vikings extended him, I would be absolutely thrilled. I'm not sure if that's in the cards, but, you know, we talked a little bit yesterday about ways to make money for that. I think they could do it if they were truly interested. But at the same time, as happy as Sheldon Richardson is here, there's a chance that he goes elsewhere in 2019, and we're stuck looking for a three-tech again. Either way, you know, both Tom Johnson and Sheldon Richardson ranked in terms of pass rush productivity right up there with the ranks of Sheldon Rankins and Jaron Reed, DeForest Buckner, Akeem Hicks, all these guys that are really highly lauded, especially in their own local markets where people are more familiar with the kind of inside defensive linemen. And the Vikings really got great three-tech play all year, and it showed. Next up, let's talk a little bit about Everson Griffin. Obviously, he missed a bunch of time with the mental health issues that he had, and I don't really need to go too far into that other than to say I think it's reasonable to expect the kind of drop-off in play that we saw. You know, when you leave football for that long, A, it's going to take you a little bit of time to get going. I think he played maybe his worst game of his, like, more recent career against the Saints that first game when he came back, and it took him a little bit to get back in the groove. I think he got back in the groove by the end of the season, but he had 5.7 was his pass rush productivity score, which is actually lower than the 2-3 techs. Now, generally, edge rushers, because they get more one-on-one matchups, should have a higher pass rush productivity score than your interior linemen. So that is both kind of a knock on Griffin's season, you know, with the appropriate context, an understandable one. But also, it really goes to show how good the three techs were. And in terms of Griffin, you know, assuming the Vikings don't make him a cap casualty or trade him away or do some of the crazy things that people are suggesting in 2019, I think we can expect him to return, you know, really bounce back to his 2016, 2017, 2015 self that we've come to know and love. And quickly wrapping up the defensive line, we'll go with kind of the backup guys now that we saw really playing. I think Steven Weatherly actually... production-wise, he really matched up with Everson Griffin. He had 5.1 in terms of pass rushing productivity, so lower than Griffin, but not so much lower. And I think we kind of could see that on tape as well, right? We saw him get in there. We saw him be disruptive. We saw him get 27 pressures to Griffin's 28 with a fairly similar amount of pass rushing snaps. Now, Griffin was able to turn them into sacks more often, and part of that is experience. But again, part of that is the stuff that I talked about at the top of the show that's just kind of out of the guy's control. So I actually think that Steven Weatherly, going into 2019, has a chance to compete with someone for a start, whether it's Everson Griffin, if maybe age is going to take hold of him, or if the Vikings do get rid of Griffin and bring in someone else, like a rookie or something, then I think Steven Weatherly could actually push for that job, which is pretty good for a college offensive or for a college outside linebacker that, you know, got drafted in the seventh round and almost didn't make the team his first year. It was a really nice season for Steven Weatherly, at least from a pass rushing perspective. And then moving on to Jaleel Johnson and Linval Joseph, very low pass rush productivity. They're nose tackles. That's okay. They're kind of not supposed to be pass rusher guys. Linval Joseph last year had an unbelievable season in terms of pressures, and that kind of, you know, sank back to earth. But they're usually taking on double teams. They're usually not expected to be the guy. You know, they're supposed to push and collapse the pocket, but Pro Football Focus won't log that as a pressure. But a coach will say, good job, you did your job. And I think that both of those guys were able to do that job reasonably well. Obviously, Linval far better than Jaleel Johnson. I actually think Jaleel Johnson had a fairly disappointing year again, but you know, he's a fourth round pick, he's a backup, you know, rotational guy, and I think he'll probably stay in that realm. But I think a lot of us had hopes of him competing for a start someday, and looking at his first 2 years, I'm not sure that's going to happen. But that's a pretty small dark spot on what is largely an unbelievable pass rushing line, all the way from Hunter through the three techs through, you know, Griffin is still a pretty good line defensive lineman, even though he wasn't like himself and he wasn't the guy we've come to expect him to be. He was still dang good. And the backups are pretty good too. You know, from a defensive line perspective, the Vikings have a tenacious pass rush. They have for years. 2018 wasn't any different. But we actually want to, I want to talk about the blitz a little bit too. So we are going to do that on the other side of an ad break real quick. And then we'll come back. We'll talk about Barr on the pass rush. We'll talk about the blitzers and we'll talk about all that stuff. And then we might actually get to special teams. I think we can still squeeze it in. So I will see you all in a minute. All right, we are back. So let's talk a little bit about Anthony Barr and this scheme, because I think when it comes to blitzers, Anthony Barr is going to be the key guy. And we'll talk a little bit about the other blitzers and how they did when blitzing, you know, the guys that don't typically pass rush. But first, I just want to talk about Barr and scheme. So Anthony Barr pass rushed on 94 snaps. That's 21% of the time, which is pretty high for a linebacker. The other guys in that range are like Hassan Reddick, Shaq Thompson, Jerrod Davis, CJ Mosley is higher, but not so much higher. So these are linebackers that are pass rushing about as much as Anthony Barr, but that means that 79% of the time he was in coverage. And I think people think that that number should increase. They should treat him, you know, maybe like Buffalo treated Lorenzo Alexander or like Kyle Van Noy is used in New England as kind of this like hybrid pass rush linebacker. And maybe that's true, but I want to talk a little bit about the Zimmer scheme. And I think I've touched on this before, but when you're blitzing, this is something that Mike Zimmer has done for like 25 years. when you're blitzing, you're sending more people. He will crowd the line of scrimmage. He will line up a whole bunch of people on the line of scrimmage and blitz all of them, all but one of them, all but two of them. And which people back off into coverage is always mixed up. So you never know who it's going to be, and there's no tells. They do a really good job of hiding it, and it's why you see all the time free sacks, you know, Harrison Smith curling around the edge unblocked and lighting up the quarterback, or Mackenzie Alexander got a couple of these, and, you know, even Barr, Kendricks, Eric Wilson got in there, you know, all the time. That means that when you don't know who's going to come, that means it's really hard to figure out who to block, and you have about a split second to do that once, you know, the ball is actually snapped and they declare who's coming and who's backing off. An offensive lineman just are too big and slow and clunky to, A, think about it that hard. You know, that requires superhuman processing speed. And then to get those big bodies in the right position to do it, it's just never going to happen. So imagine you are an offensive coordinator, and you have to go up against Mike Zimmer, you know, you're Sean McVay or whoever. How are you going to attack this? Well, there's a spacing issue that this scheme presents, and it's kind of how offenses will always try to attack the Vikings. So you imagine all the players, you know, those crazy blitz packages with all the players lined up on the line of scrimmage, and you, as the offensive coordinator, are looking at all these guys kind of crowding around the line and the protection, and you see all of the open field that they're vacating, right? Well, you're going to throw a quick slant or something to the flat, you know, a swing pattern to your running back and say, all right, go chase him down. You're out of position. So teams will constantly try to do that. And against teams with that run Zimmer's system, you know, the Bengals ran Zimmer's system for long after they left, but to way lesser effect because they just don't have the Anthony Barrs and Eric Kendrickses of the world. So you throw that swing pass to like Alvin Kamara or whoever, and Anthony Barr can actually chase it down and stop it in the flat, and he's really, really good at that. That really shows a lot of value. And the other value is his actual threat as a pass rusher. Among all linebackers, he was the most productive pass rusher on a per snap basis. The most. 13.8 pass rushing productivity. That was more than any defensive lineman. Now, obviously, the circumstances are different, right? Because he's blitzing, he's frequently going up against tight ends or running backs, and there's usually an element of surprise involved because of what I just talked about. But you could argue that he was the best pass rushing linebacker in the league. Now, a quick side note, the way PFF categorizes linebackers excludes guys like Von Miller and Justin Houston, that really they're edge rushers, you know, they're guys that pass rush way more often than they actually cover. But for guys that primarily are there to cover but also blitz, Anthony Barr was the best in the league. And I think this pays dividends all around the rest of the offense. And I think this is really where you can see the impact that Mike Zimmer's talking about when he's saying, oh, you know, teams like will design plays around him and then let everybody else get the production. Because if you look at Jaron Kearse, Mackenzie Alexander, Mike Hughes, you know, these guys did not pass rush a lot. Mackenzie Alexander pass rushed 21 times. He got a pressure on 8 of them. That is an unreal amount of efficiency. And it's because everybody's paying attention to Anthony Barr and sometimes Eric Kendricks, and nobody's paying attention to Mackenzie Alexander. So when he blitz, he gets there super, super often. Eric Wilson benefited from the same thing. I think when Eric Wilson was replacing Kendricks and the two guys were on the field at the same time, I mean, imagine you're a quarterback. You're like, I'm going to, you know, slide the protection toward 55, not 50. And then 50 gets in there. Elsewhere, Eric Kendricks, he had a pass rushing productivity of 9.4. Kind of wish that was higher. But again, you know, he's a middle linebacker, so he's not really, that's not really what we extended him for. That's not what he's supposed to be there for, but it's just another facet of Eric Kendricks's year. And in all the defensive things we've talked about with Kendricks, you know, he had a down year, and we've talked about that a lot. And, everybody else on the team really had, pretty, either minimal snaps or minimal impact. But I really think that when it comes to the blitz game, when it comes to the non-defensive line guys and their pass rush, Anthony Barr elevates the guys around him. And I think if you lose Anthony Barr to free agency, you're going to feel that. You're going to see suddenly Mackenzie Alexander is not getting home as often, and guys like Eric Wilson don't get home as often, and Harrison Smith, he also was a huge beneficiary of all of this, and he had a pass rushing productivity that was like very high. It was 15.4, again, better than any defensive lineman, because when he blitzes, it's unexpected. When he blitzes, it's unexpected, right? He pass rushed 39 times, got a pressure on 9 of them. That's really, really good. And I think just from a tape and scheme angle, it's pretty easy to point at Anthony Barr as the reason. And then when he does blitz, he's amazing at it. So I think from this angle, I mean, Anthony Barr is really, really valuable. So that does it for the pass rush postmortem headline. A lot of people are very good, but let's move into the special teams review a little bit. We should obviously start with the whole Daniel Carlson and Dan Bailey switch. You know, Daniel Carlson, he had a guy who is not Mike Prefer. So I think I actually really blamed Mike Prefer a lot for this originally when this happened. But basically, he changed something in his technique. He started taking one extra step to, I think, maybe get more power or something like that. When he came between college and the draft, he like changed that about his game, and it really screwed him up. And Mike Prefer kind of neglected to fix it. And I think I blamed him a lot for that. And it really is up to you how much you want to blame him for that. But he was unable to fix it. Daniel Carlson exploded in Lambeau Field, totally melted down, missed three kicks. The game ended in a tie. He gets cut. He goes to Oakland. He takes that extra step out of his routine. He now has more control. He can do this more accurately. And he has a really nice season in Oakland. It's a really, really bad look for the special teams staff, which has now been replaced. And Dan Bailey comes in and then has like the worst season of his career, or the worst season of his in a really long time. I don't think you all need me to tell you that, yeah, the field goal kicking was pretty bad this year. From a punting angle, I actually am pretty happy with Matt Weil. He had really nice hang time on the year. That was something that's very important to the Vikings. We talked about that a little bit when Mike Prefer left. You should go listen to that episode. And when we talked about Marwan Maloof, who is rumored to be the next coach, special teams coordinator for the Vikings. He's coming over from Miami as from an assistant under Darren Rizzi there. And we'll see if they prioritize those like high, lofty punts that the Vikings asked Matt Weil to do, and Matt Weil was very good at. We'll see if that continues. Elsewhere, I just want to talk a little bit about the coverage units. I think that's also important to talk about. Kentrell Brothers and Eric Wilson both were excellent. They got 7 and 10 tackles, respectively, on special teams and super high grades. Kentrell Brothers did not miss a special teams tackle all season. Eric Wilson missed a couple. Ben Gedeon missed one. But otherwise, the tackling on special teams was like really, really clean. You had Amir Abdullah missed one, and a couple of typically non-physical players, you know, Holton Hill and Brandon Zylstra missed tackles sometimes too. You saw some rough special teams play from Stephen Weatherly as well. But otherwise, you know, the coverage units were very, very clean. Jaron Kearse was excellent as always. Anthony Harris was excellent. CJ Ham was excellent. And you saw some really nice coverage play from the Vikings. This has kind of been a pattern, and it's something that I don't think Prefer got enough credit for, even though I was one of the people who was like, is like kind of fine with him leaving. I do think he deserves credit for there being really good coverage and really sound tackling, and the fundamentals that you learn on special teams also contributes to, you know, guys like Eric Wilson and Stephen Weatherly ascending to be starting quality defenders when it's actually their turn to go out on defense. So, you know, from a special teams angle, I know that was really quick, but, you know, special teams, there's not really that much to talk about. The kicking was bad, the punting was pretty good, the coverage was pretty good. That's about all there is. And that is actually going to do it for this episode of Locked On Vikings. Remember to go vote in the pain bracket. Remember to ask your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On Vikings. And remember to go to MyBookie and enter the promo code when you make your account Locked On, and it'll match your deposit dollar for dollar. Until next time, when we will actually preview the Super Bowl and talk about it, and that'll be the last football game we get to talk about in quite a while, unfortunately. My name is Luke Braun. I have been your host. You can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You can find the pain bracket there. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. And until next time, skull!